down, in the darkest depths of the ocean, rest the remains of a ship, an ocean liner that has fascinated humans for more than a century. The Titanic was an implausible story. The biggest ship, brimming with rich and famous passengers, sinks on its maiden voyage. It's inspired movies, books, replicas of almost everything aboard, and a thriving market for genuine artifacts from the ill-fated luxury liner. Now, Central Ohioans get the chance to step aboard, or at least step up the staircase, at COSI's Titanic exhibit. Joining us now is Josh Sarver, Chief Experience Officer at COSI. Welcome to All Sides, Josh.
Good morning. How are you?
The new exhibit is called Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition, and it's been viewed by more than 30 million people across the globe. Why did COSI want to bring it to Columbus?
Well, it's a fantastic exhibition. You know, it's been setting records all over the country. Recently, it was in Pittsburgh, where it set records for attendance at their location. And this is the third time that we've actually hosted this exhibition. So it's great to bring it back to us after about 12 years of hiatus. What better time to bring it back than when you come around to an anniversary date such as what we recently saw?
So let's talk a little bit about what's in the exhibit, because first and foremost, I think the most famous part is this grand staircase. It's rebuilt.
That's correct. It is a grand staircase, and it's just like what you saw in the movies itself. It is to scale. It's exactly as you would have seen it on the Titanic itself. It's amazing, two stories tall. You actually get to walk up the stairs, get your photo taken. It's a really engaging experience. The whole thing is so immersive.
And you can also walk down a first-class hallway.
That's correct. So if you wanted to feel like what it would have been like to be a passenger, whether it's the first class, the second class, or even the third class, or even the crew, we immerse you in those experiences.
And so because photography wasn't as common, you know, 112 years ago when the Titanic sank, how do we know exactly what it looks like? How do I know I'm getting a real experience?
Yeah, what we have is actually some of the real drawings and engineering drawings from the Titanic itself and other ships of its likeness as well. And so we've referred to those and looked at the photos, even though there are very few of them. But, you know, at the same time, while it was very tragic, there were over 700 passengers and crew who did survive, and we get their stories as well, and they can tell us through documentation and narrative of what that looked like.
Yeah, what I found most fascinating in prepping for this was that there was an Irish photographer who disembarked in Ireland after taking pictures, and those are really the foundation for a lot of what we know about the interior.
That's correct. Anything that we can get from any of those passengers and crew, the stories, the photographs, the narratives, it's amazing what you can capture.
And there's also artifacts.
That's
from
right.
The actual Titanic. Tell me a little bit about what's in the exhibit.
Yeah, actual real artifacts from the bottom of the ocean. You know, they've done multiple exhibitions down there to find these, do documentation and recover some of the artifacts, because the longer that we leave them down there, the more likely they are to decompose and we'll never be able to see them ever again. And so as part of those expeditions, they've been able to pull up over 240 objects at COSI or on display, unique displays. They have recovered over 3,000 total.
So what are some of the objects? What's your favorite object?
I have to pick one. Let me give you two.
Okay.
One is the mooring. So that's what attaches the ship to the actual dock itself. And this piece is so heavy that when we installed it at COSI, it barely was able to be lifted by the forklift. This thing is so massive. So it's on display. The other piece is the davit, which is what they use to lower the lifeboats down into the water. And so if you think about that story, the emotional sort of connection to those davits and those lifeboats, because as we know, there weren't enough lifeboats on there to rescue every single individual. And as they were lowering them, the emotions, the things that were happening at those davits is pretty amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah, if you think about, like, the last time those were above the surface of the water, what it was like.
That's correct. A lot of energy going on and emotional things that are happening, the decisions that were being made by gentlemen and women and ladies and families as they were making those decisions on what to do.
You also have a lot of history on the passengers.
That's correct. So one of the things that's unique for this exhibition, as you enter the exhibition, you are given a boarding pass. And on that boarding pass, it tells you the name and the story behind an actual passenger or a crew member who was on the ship. And as you move through that, you learn more about those individuals. And as you come to the end, you learn the fate of yourself as a passenger at that time.
I love that.
Yeah. So lots of different stories, you know, not just the boarding passes, but individuals who were a part of the build of the Titanic itself, the crew members, you know, those individuals who are down in the boiler rooms, who are trying to save the ship until the very last moment, doing as much as they could. The first class, the second class, and the third class passengers, all their stories are told all the way to the end. And then what happened after they came back to the United States.
More than 50 Ohioans were on the Titanic, and there's a memorial that honors them up in Cleveland. Does the exhibit tell any of their stories?
We do like to have as many local connections as possible, so whether it's here locally in Central Ohio or to Ohio or the United States, and so we like to share those stories out. One of the greatest things that we did with this to make it localized is doing an art contest in which individuals were able to create displays, which we put out in the hallway, to highlight those stories.
Oh, that's really neat. So do you have a favorite passenger?
Well, I mean, everyone talks about Molly Brown, right?
Yeah.
You know, and the story behind it. But actually, my favorite passenger, and I'm going to forget his name, but he is an author of a book. And that book was put out before the Titanic was to set sail. And in that book, he talked about a liner that was going to hit an iceberg and was going to sink with many casualties, and the reason behind that was because there were not enough lifeboats on that particular boat that he wrote about. That was 2 years before the Titanic even set sail, and he was writing that boat to help change legislation at the time to ensure the safety of passengers aboard these liners. And so it's amazing, it's kind of prophetic, that he was writing about this, and then he ends up perishing, unfortunately, on the Titanic.
What?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to find this book.
Yes. There's so many great stories. You know, again, as I said, whether it's the crew members who might have survived and were able to tell their stories to individual families who had to make those tough decisions, there's such amazing narratives behind the Titanic. And I think that's what draws people in, young and old, to really want to know more, you know, about the Titanic, and makes this sort of an evergreen exhibition, which is why we brought it back for a third time.
Yeah, you know, there's other ships that have sunk, some with more lives lost than the Titanic. But why is it the Titanic that endures?
Well, I think that, again, so many great stories. There's also, as you know, as by the music, lots of great movies out there that tell a different story. And while Jack and Rose are fictional characters, we sort of attach to those stories, you know, stories of whether it's tragedy or love. You know, all those type of things were happening. And it's such a mixture of individuals that were a part of the Titanic that really makes this story a connection. You know, it wasn't just the rich that this impacted, or those that were not as wealthy. It happened to all of them, the working class and the upper class, all of them. And so I think everyone can find a connection to this experience.
Yeah, actually, John Jacob Astor IV mm-hmm. and the Macy's department store co-owner and his wife both, all three of them perished aboard the Titanic.
That's correct.
And they, some of the richest men in the world died.
That's correct. The richest man in the world at the time, owner of a department stores across the world, you know, making the decisions to stay on the ship at the time. And so you had that happening. Again, that's why the davit to me is such an impressive piece. It's quite massive, actually, when you see it in person. And then on the floor in front of the davit, we actually have laid out an outline of the lifeboat, so you can feel what it would have been like to be lowered into the water there. And such an amazing experience, and to feel that emotion is quite impressive.
I would imagine. What kind of reaction and feedback are you getting from those who have stood there where in the outline of the lifeboat?
You know, we've seen individuals have emotional responses. You know, individuals coming into that experience, you know, getting that boarding pass, being excited to know what happens to them and other individuals. And then they get to that moment where they're on the lifeboat and they're sitting there. And the next thing they're going to know is whether or not they're going to perish as part of this or survive. And so you have that emotional response, individuals who are weeping in the exhibition, but also individuals just excited to immerse themselves in it. So, you know, again, whether you're young or old, there's something there for you and an emotional response to have.
You know, Steven Spielberg, when he did the movie Titanic, went to great lengths to make it accurate, down to the patterns on the china. But are there any things in the exhibit that, oh, James Cameron did the Titanic? I'm being corrected. I apologize to James Cameron deeply. I don't know why I thought it was Spielberg. But James Cameron did the Titanic, and the detail that went into that movie is well, well known and well documented. He spent years researching it. So what can I see that, like, if I watched the movie, if I'm excited to come see it, like what kind of artifacts reflect the movie?
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the detail in the actual glassware and the fine china. You'll see that. You'll actually see the real objects, the real plates that were found there. And it's interesting because the plates, when they landed, they were in crates. And so as the crates deteriorated, they were still in the nice little sleeves, you know, lined up. And so those levels of detail that he captured in the film are actually there in the exhibition itself. You know, and then you think about, you know, that last moment as the ship is sinking underneath the sea, you know, you get to see finer details of you know, where Jack was on that ship, you know, and the interesting story on that, if I could for just a second, is that that's actually a true story. Even though Jack isn't real and Rose wasn't there, there were two individuals and two best friends who were on the ship at the time. And the story goes, because he survives, is he was on the bow of the ship as it was going down, or the stern of the ship as it was going down, and he was the last to jump off. And that experience that he told, the narrative that he told in history, is the way they used it in the film as they were being pulled down into the water and pushed up and pulled back down into the water, Rose and Jack. That's from his narrative. And
so he's like the real-life Jack.
That's right, the real-life Jack.
Without maybe the romantic love story.
Right, exactly, exactly.
But he survived, not his friend.
He survived, his best friend did not.
Was the best friend a woman?
No.
Okay, so it was two guys trying
to
survive.
Indeed.
So I have to ask to reference back to Jack and Rose and the staircase, which is sort of the showpiece of this installation, because anyone who's seen the movie knows that scene at the end where they're reunited on the grand staircase. And I got to know, has anybody proposed at the exhibit?
You know, it's a beautiful scene from the film, and it's a beautiful opportunity for individuals to come into COSI and have an amazing moment. And you are correct. There has been a proposal already on the staircase at COSI.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but we will welcome others to come on down if they want to experience that as well, because it is such a unique experience. And individuals of our age grew up with this film, and so there's an emotional connection to that as well.
But I want to quickly touch on the price, because ticket prices are not cheap, especially if you're not a COSI member. It works out to nearly $200 for a family of four. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is a lot of money. But what you get with that experience is not only do you get to go to the Titanic exhibition, where you could spend anywhere from 45 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how deep of a dive you want to go with it, but you also get the rest of the museum as well. So you can go into the AM&H, the American Museum of Natural History's Dinosaur Gallery, and where we have Nature of Color currently, Progress Exhibit, Gadgets, the Space Exhibit, the Planetarium is included. We have a film in the Giant Scream Theater. So there's a lot of great opportunities. You can spend an entire day with COSI as part of that.
Is there anything that you're doing to make sure that, like, people who maybe can't afford it can get into it? Are there any programs? Or I think the libraries sometimes have, like, you can check out, like, passes for admission to COSI, which can make it a little bit cheaper.
That is correct. So definitely work with your local institutions to see what's available. But we also encourage individuals who might be on lower income to look at Museums for All. That's a great opportunity if you're on WIC or Medicaid or CareSource or something like that, where you can get admission for COSI for the day for $3. So that's a great discount for individuals in need.
It's like $40 or $50 to get in.
That's correct.
Yeah. So it lasts until September 2nd, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, Labor Day.
And so we don't know when it'll be back.
That's right. You never know when it could come back. I mean, we said it was the third time. Maybe there'll be a fourth time, but it could be another 12, 15 years. And so want to encourage people to take advantage of this opportunity while it's here.
And it is timed, correct? So you actually have to book a specific time that you're going to go. You can't just show up and go to it when you get there.
That is correct. And it has been consistently selling out, especially on the weekends. So weekdays, a little bit more open availability, but you do have to reserve a specific time, sometime between 10:15 and about 3:45 is a good time to jump in there and leave yourself enough time to explore the exhibition. But certainly come on down, but do reserve in advance.
And you can book like a week or two in advance.
Absolutely. You can go ahead and reach out right now and book as far in advance as you'd like.
And speaking of costs, I was curious, like, what is the exhibit, like, cost to bring to COSI, to install, to put up? I mean, that staircase probably took a couple days just to build out.
Indeed. That is actually a brand new staircase that they built specifically for us.
So it wasn't here 12 years ago.
So that specific one was not. So they do travel this one all over the country. And so because this was a 15,000 square foot exhibition, you know, which we've hosted before, but they wanted to make sure that it was pristine for us. So they rebuilt that one and built it specifically for us. And so great exhibition. I encourage people to come down.
Great. And last but not least, where do we go online to get tickets?
COSI.org.
That is Josh Sarver, Chief Experience Officer at COSI. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, the Titanic on TikTok, how influencers are informing a new generation about the century-old tragedy. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. It's been more than a century since the Titanic set sail from England on its maiden voyage, a journey it never completed. More than 1,500 people perished when the ship sank, and the last living survivor passed in 2009. Yet their stories live on in exhibits like the one we've been talking about at COSI and online with people like Rafael Avila. He's known as the Titanic Guy and has amassed more than 700,000 followers who watch him debunk Titanic myths and share stories about the wreck, the passengers, and that infamous maiden voyage. Welcome to All Sides, Rafael.
Thank you so much. Very excited to be here.
So I feel like the Titanic in some ways is the ship that launched 1,000 conspiracy theories. And so much of your page seems to be devoted to debunking all the various myths about the ship. So I want to start actually with the most enduring myth, I suppose, is that it was not the Titanic. The Titanic did not sink. Why does this continue to persist?
Yeah, you know what? Whenever you have such a major event, I would say, such as the Titanic or many other disasters, I think there's a large population that really wants answers. There are a lot of people that are uncomfortable with, you know, disasters actually happening. So this is something that happens with Titanic. You know, people want some answers. It's very hard for people to grasp the fact that a ship could go out there on its maiden voyage, the grandest ship in the world, and then be brought down by something so inconspicuous as an iceberg in the middle of the ocean. That just doesn't make sense, and it doesn't sit right with a lot of people. So over the years, there have been these theories that have popped up, and the one that you alluded to, Anna, is the most prominent one, this Olympic switch theory. So basically, quickly to summarize what the theory goes that basically, the Titanic was, in fact, not the Titanic. It was the Olympic, Titanic's older sister ship. The theory says that, you know, the Olympic, which had been in a crash, which is true, by the way, that the Olympic did collide with the HMS Hawk in September of 1911. But the theory says that the Olympic was so badly damaged that the White Star Line, the company that owned the Titanic, they said, hey, listen, we are going to cut our losses, and we're actually just going to switch in secret the Titanic with the Olympic. We're going to, you know, change the nameplates. And in fact, we're going to send out the damaged old Olympic. We're going to sink it on purpose and claim Titanic's insurance. No one will know about it. And then we end up getting our money. That's essentially what the theory states. Of course, what we do on my page, you know, my page is a page where we talk about the disaster, the Titanic, the ship itself, the passengers. So my page is devoted just to sharing the facts about the Titanic. And when you look at the facts, it makes absolutely no sense. And I've seen, you know, anyone who's seen my videos, we go through the facts, you know, one by one, and we just show, okay, it's a fun theory, I guess, you know, it makes for a good story, but the facts it doesn't back it up.
Yeah, I did a deep dive into your TikTok page the other night, and I was impressed with all of the details down to how much money they would make off the insurance claim to these manufacturing plates or like imprints on all of the ships. And I have to ask, because you are a font of Titanic knowledge, how did you decide that like this was going to be my thing?
Yes, that's a great question. Everyone always asks me that. How did you become the Titanic guy? So I think for many of us in the Titanic community, it's something that was really sparked at a very young age. For me, I don't know why, but ever since I was a little kid, I've always been drawn to disasters. You know, plane crashes, things like that. I was a very, morbid kid, you could say. But I remember watching a documentary when I was seven. It was probably when I was 7 years old, and it was, it was a documentary about the ship that sank, famous ship. It went down. I thought it was so captivating. I remember asking my dad. I was like, "What is this?" He explained to me it was the Titanic, and I was like, "Okay, this is very, very cool." In 1997, when I was 7 years old, if you recall, December of 1997 is when James Cameron's Titanic movie came out. So I somehow convinced my parents to take me, young seven, almost 8-year-old kid, to go watch the movie. And then that sort of, everything clicked, and that really solidified my interest. So what I would do after that, on my, spare time, I would go to the public library, take out all the books that I could find on the Titanic, read about the Titanic, read about the sinking and her passengers, survivors, the crew, and just be completely enthralled in the story of the Titanic. And it's just something that never went away. It's just always been a part of my life. So in 2020, when we were all stuck at home, me, like, many people, you download TikTok, you
Yeah,
try
you're
to.
like, I'll give it a whirl.
Exactly, why not? So I decided it was the anniversary of the sinking, and I always tend to watch this real-time sinking animation by Titanic Honor and Glory on YouTube. And as I was waiting for that to start, I figured, hey, why not just share, a quote-unquote fun fact about the Titanic? I picked an interesting survivor story about the again, drunk baker, as he's been known in history, Charles Jugin. And then it was a story of basically the baker on the Titanic. When the ship started sinking, he decided to just drink heavily while also helping other passengers and everything. And James Cameron actually has an actor play him in the movie. He sort of stares at Rose when they're on the stern as it's going down. And basically, in my TikTok, I just showed that clip and I said, hey, did you know that this person in the movie, that's actually a real person, that's based on a real person? So I quickly explained the story of Charles Jugin. I added some captions, added a voiceover, and then I just posted the TikTok, not really thinking anything about it. Very quickly, I started noticing the numbers climb. It went from like 100 views to 300 to 1,000 to 10,000. It was crazy. When I woke up the next day, it had nearly 2 million views. So that was quite surprising. So I decided to just keep on sharing more interesting Titanic stories. And every video started getting millions of views. And very quickly, in those first few weeks, I amassed a bunch of followers. And then I just kept up the momentum because it's a topic that I could talk about forever, right? So making videos about it, easy work. So I just
Yeah, I mean, there were
kept on making
2,500
videos.
passengers, so that's 2,500 TikToks.
Lots of stories to share. As soon as I started sharing those videos, other Titanic enthusiasts seemed to find my content. You know how the algorithm works.
Oh,
It
yeah.
suggested to people, and we just amassed this big community of Titanic enthusiasts, and that's how I became the Titanic guy. I've always been a Titanic boy, and this is how I became the online Titanic guy.
Yeah, I want to move a little bit towards recent history with the Titanic wreckage, because I think that's such an interesting story too. So in September of 1985, we finally discover the ship. And you actually have a video about how oceanographer Robert Ballard discovered it. Can you tell us a little bit about that moment in history?
Yes, so that was a big moment in history, and I know here we're talking about why Titanic still fascinates. But what many people may not know is that there was actually a big lull, after the Second World War. Around there was not a lot of interest in Titanic, right? Because if you think about when Titanic sank, 1912, very shortly afterwards we had the Great War, World War I. Then you had the Roaring Twenties, the Great Depression, World War II. So there was a lot going on
There's a
in the
lot going
world.
on.
Yeah. So people didn't really talk about Titanic. There was the first big spark of interest probably came in the 50s when Walter Lord released his book, A Night to Remember. And shortly afterwards, they made the first big Titanic film that I would say, A Night to Remember. So there was a big, big spark there. And obviously the next big one would be when Bob Ballard discovered the Titanic in 1985. So basically in the TikTok, I explained that, you know, Bob Ballard, he went out to essentially, he went out looking for something else, right? He went out looking for these subs that had been lost to previous decades. So that's how he got the funding to go do that, because it is expensive to go underwater exploring. So he got the funding and he had asked, if I complete this in time, can I use the rest of the time to go search for the Titanic? They basically said, yeah. And Bob Ballard found what he was looking for in essentially like 2 days, like very, very quickly. So he spent the rest of the expedition looking for the Titanic. Long story short, he found the Titanic. And that was a huge, huge moment for people. Obviously,
that would be like finding Amelia Earhart's plane. It's one of those mysteries that like we are dying as a human population to solve.
Those things that have been, you know, persistent for, you know, for decades, those stories. And finally, we see the real Titanic, and that sparked another wave of interest, which
we could finally settle how it sank.
Exactly. And we could finally, it was confirmed that Titanic did in fact split in two, because the narrative before that was that Titanic went down in one piece, right?
Yeah. And now in May of 2023, there were 3D scans of the wreck, and they are so much higher quality. I mean, technology has just gotten better since 1985, but there's another expedition planned for May of 2024. What do we know about this next trip down to the ship?
So, yes, interesting you say that. I actually went down to the RMS Titanic exhibition in Orlando, which is run by RMS Titanic Inc. Mm-hmm. And they are...
That's the company that owns the salvage rights to the ship.
Exactly. They're the salver and possessor of the Titanic. So they're going to do another expedition. And keep in mind, I know that, you know, obviously in 2023, when we hear Titanic expeditions, one thing comes to mind, and it's obviously the tragedy that we saw. But Titanic expeditions have been happening for a while in proper subs and everything for scientific purposes. And the reason why they do that is to learn more about the wreck, to do more mapping of the debris field and whatnot. And essentially what they're going to be doing in 2024 is more mapping. They've actually partnered up with another company that I'm a fan of, Titanic Honor and Glory. If you don't know what that company is, they're essentially, it started off as like a video game, but now it's become, they're creating like a virtual museum of the Titanic. So they've recreated every inch of the ship in HD. You can walk around the ship. So they've actually partnered up with RMS Titanic Inc. to basically say, hey, if you're going down to the wreck, there's this one part of Titanic which we're not entirely sure about. If you're down there anyway, go and take a look at this wreck, right? So the expedition coming up in 2024 is another expedition to find out more information about the Titanic.
But it's been scaled back, right? Because there's like legal wrangling over how much access we should give to it.
There's always legal wrangling. I don't know the specifics about, you know, the scope of the of what they're actually going to be searching, but it wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. There's always been legal wranglings, you know, regarding the Titanic.
Now, have you seen the exhibit that's going to be on display here in Kosai, this roving exhibit where you can like walk up the staircase and like immerse yourself in the Titanic?
I haven't been to the one in Ohio, but I've been to
it tours. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to several other exhibitions, you know, where you get to do something very, very similar. You go up the grand staircase. Sometimes they recreate other rooms within the Titanic with real artifacts strewn about the exhibit, which is a very unique and special experience, especially for those of you who are fans of the Titanic and who grew up with the Titanic. It's something else to actually see. You know, a piece of luggage that went down with the ship brought up, right? It's incredible.
And speaking of things that get brought up, I'm wondering if you can answer that question that everyone always has. Like, if we know where the Titanic is, why can't we bring the whole ship up?
Well, two reasons. I mean, there's sort of the ethical argument and the technical argument. Many people would say, you know, the Titanic, you could consider it a grave site. You don't want to be disturbing a site where 1,500 people lost their lives. The other argument is that it's not just a gravesite. It is an accident site, which is why it's important to investigate it. But from a technical perspective, this is a really, really heavy ship.
it's really deep.
Very, very deep. If you know, it's funny that we actually know more about space than we know about our oceans, right? It's hard to navigate in water that deep. And if you've ever seen what a sub looks like that does deep water, deep sea exploration, it's small. Because it has, you know, the windows and everything has to be so thick. So it's very difficult to do work down there. So, you know, the technical aspect, it'd be nearly impossible to bring it up without completely breaking apart the superstructure. And not to mention the Titanic is in two pieces. The bow section is relatively intact, but the stern section, not so much. If you've ever seen images of the stern, it's really blown apart. So it'd be very technically difficult to do. Also, who would fund that? Right. Yeah. It would be incredibly expensive. And many
you'd probably destroy it in bringing it up.
Exactly. Exactly.
So bring up bits and pieces.
Yeah. You know, you can bring up the bits and pieces, put them in a museum and, you know, preserve that memory in an ethical way.
So there was a lot of, obviously, outside of the people that lost their lives, like people lost everything they owned. So I got to ask, following the movie of the Titanic, is there any sort of heart of the ocean big item that were lost aboard the ship?
Well, the one thing, the heart of the ocean, unfortunately,
is fictional.
Is fictional, yes. There was no heart of the ocean on the Titanic. But one of the items that was on the Titanic is that vehicle that you see Jack and Rose. And that was indeed on the Titanic. That was lost. That was incredibly expensive. So that is sort of a fun fact that, you know, that same vehicle is at the bottom of the ocean somewhere. We probably will never be able to recover it because it's plowed into the ocean floor. But that was indeed on the Titanic.
That goes to attention to detail, I think, in the movie, right? That he chooses this scene, but he chooses a thing that actually would have been on board.
The attention to detail is incredible, especially if you look at the deleted scenes. Unfortunately, a lot of the deleted scenes have the actual fun, historical, real life stuff that happened. But James Cameron, you know, being the great storyteller that he is, he realizes, okay, we need to trim things down a bit. The movie's already 3 hours long, so we need to be a little bit succinct in the storytelling and keep the pacing. But if anyone's interested, I would suggest going on YouTube, search the deleted scenes. All of those are very, very historically accurate.
I have to ask you a really difficult question. Do you have a favorite story or a favorite passenger from the Titanic?
That is a very difficult question. Yes, because there's so many. And, you know, I always have a soft spot for all of the crew. And one of my favorites, and I don't think it was done justice in the movie, is First Officer Murdoch. And there was a lot of controversy after the movie, because in the movie, he's depicted as somebody who, you know, sort of took a bribe from Cal and eventually threw the money back in his face. And then eventually, you know, he turns the gun on himself in the movie. And there's no evidence to suggest that that was the case. And Murdoch's family obviously did not like that depiction. And if we look at the actual historical accounts and the eyewitness accounts of Murdoch, he was one of the heroes of Titanic. Many people owe their lives to his efforts. He was the officer essentially in charge of boarding all of the starboard or right side lifeboats. Now, the way that Murdoch went about this was he implemented a rule of women and children first. Now, initially in those first couple of lifeboats, people did not want to board those lifeboats. They didn't think Titanic was sinking. There was no cause for alarm. And why would anyone want to go into these rickety boats in the middle of the ocean? It's pitch black. It's freezing when you're seemingly on board this unsinkable ship, brightly lit, nice and warm. And, you know, nobody was told that the ship was sinking. So why would anyone want to board? So initially, it was hard to get people on there, passengers on there. So he allowed many, many gentlemen to join their wives to, you know, to go on board and to help encourage other people to get onto the lifeboat. So many, many people owe their lives to his efforts. Also, one interesting tidbit of information is if you go down to the wreck today, and if you go to the starboard side of the ship, you will see the very first davit, sort of the davits were the cranes that lower the lifeboats. You'll see that very first davit in the swung in position, because as the ship was going down, Murdoch was desperately, desperately trying to get that final lifeboat, collapsible A, hooked up, you know, get, you know, trying to get everything ready to lower it one last time. Unfortunately, he ran out of time, but that davit is in that swung in position, and it almost marks, it's almost like a statue, which marks the, it's sort of a testament to his bravery, his efforts until the very last moment, trying to be selfless and rescue as many passengers as possible.
And you can see one of the davits from the actual ship at the Kosai Titanic exhibit. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how the Titanic remains big business, especially for those who collect and trade those artifacts. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about the Titanic this hour and the enduring fascination we have with a ship that sunk more than 100 years ago. Kosai is hosting an exhibit now through September that features more than 200 artifacts and a real-life replica of the ship's famous Grand Staircase. Over the weekend in the UK, the gold pocket watch from the wealthiest man on board, John Jacob Astor, fetched $1.5 million. A record for Titanic artifacts. Joining us now to talk about the value of those items recovered from the Titanic is Titanic Museum Attractions Curator Paul Burns. Welcome to All Sides.
Good morning.
And still with us is TikTok's Titanic guy, Rafael Avila. Thanks for sticking with us.
Of course.
So, artifacts are always hot commodities, but it seems in particular, Paul, with the Titanic, they fetch really, really hefty price tags.
Yes, it's really of late that they're reaching these heights. It's probably in the last 5-7 years, with starting off with the Wallace Hartley violin at $1.7 million, and now the Astor watch is the most expensive pocket watch sold on board and the second most ever artifact sold from on board Titanic.
You know, Rafael, I think it's a difficult balance between private collectors and, you know, these public exhibits that allow the world to sort of see them. How do you think we strike that balance between, you know, one person owning the pocket watch versus, you know, the collection here at Kosai?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know that's one of those things where people were always arguing, you know, whether we should even bring things up from the wreck. I was always somebody that was a little bit more pragmatic in my approach. I think it was always a great thing to be able to put these things out in an exhibit. I'm always more in favor of putting these artifacts in an exhibit for people to actually go and see tangible physical objects that were in Titanic, especially if we want to continue teaching people about Titanic, keeping passenger stories alive. It is something to, you know, go online and see a video, but it really is a completely different experience to go to one of these exhibits and actually see a real life artifact, to see something that was on the Titanic, a piece of china that was on the ocean floor that was brought up. The Wallace Hartley violin, for example, right? That it really is an emotional experience to go and actually see that. So for me, I'd always be in favor of trying to keep things in an exhibit and trying to keep artifacts together.
What is the Wallace Hartley violin, for those who don't know?
Yes. So for those that watched the movie, you watched that the orchestra was playing until the very end. Now, that is something that actually happened on the real Titanic during the wreck. The ship's orchestra, led by Wallace Hartley, they did play until very, very late into the sinking. And that violin that we're talking about was the actual violin that Wallace Hartley played on the Titanic that went down with the ship. It was eventually recovered. And as Paul was mentioned, it was indeed sold. And I think the way that it works, the violin has been lent out to different exhibits so that people have the opportunity to see that. And it's one of those artifacts that you're just like, wow, this is something that really happened. It was on the ocean floor, and it's miraculous that we've been able to recover that and we can see that.
Paul, I want to ask a little bit about your museums, because they are in Tennessee and Missouri, and they are half scale structures that mimic the original ships, so you essentially get to walk aboard.
Correct. Yeah. If you look at from the exterior, you'll see half the Titanic and half scale. So when you look up from the bottom of the bow, you're seeing half of what she would have actually looked like in real life. But inside the ship, we've recreated the grand staircase to scale, several of her interior rooms, like the third class stateroom. I'm calling it a stateroom because before Titanic came along, third class was in steerage, so they didn't have staterooms on their own. And then we've got first class parlor suites and other areas of the ship, including the boilers. And you can actually shovel some coal into the boilers and see what their reaction is.
That's quite an immersive replica. What made you want to build this really immersive experience for visitors?
Well, myself, personally, I've been in the museum business my entire adult life. I've done many, many different genres of museums. And then when I got together with John Jocelyn, who was the founder of both of the museums, he just wanted to recreate that. He obviously did a dive to the wreck, the second dive to the actual Titanic wreck site. And this was always his dream to open up museums. So we got together and along with his wife, Mary Kellogg, we put this thing together and we've been working on it for over 24 years now.
I understand that at some point you guys had the bell from the Crow Nest lookout that they rang to first warn of the iceberg.
We actually have never had that, unfortunately. Oh. That would be RMST, the folks that are in Columbus right now. Yeah, they have the underwater. They have the exclusivity of owning now the underwater artifacts. All of our artifacts, I think, are equally as impressive. They're just recovered from the surface debris field, or recovered from bodies, or carried off by passengers and crew.
That would be interesting to see what passengers chose to save with the little time that they had left.
Yeah, there's always been that question. You know, you see in the inquiries, you see the witness testimonies, you hear of the accounts from the folks in letters and in newspapers and in later years on radio and even television, their accounts of the wreck, or, you know, of the sinking. So it's always something that you know, I always say that in many ways we'll never know, because it's a traumatic situation. It's a situation in which your life is threatened, and some believed it at the time, right at the moment, and everybody believed it by the end, obviously, in this tragedy. But I always think about the children that were in these lifeboats and told everyone then that this ship had split in two. went before she sank, and practically no one believed them until Ballard found the Titanic on the bottom of the ocean in two pieces in 1987. So it's always ironic that the children are probably the best witnesses, because they're maybe not even grasping the moment yet, and not till later in life or even later in time period that they grasp such a moment.
Paul, I have a difficult question for you too, which is,
sure,
what is your favorite artifact in your museum?
It's really an easy one for me. Oh. Well, the violin is a great piece, and we hope to have the Astor watch back on display in the future. We had it on display a year before it went to auction for a whole year. My favorite artifact is a pincushion shaped like the life ring aboard Titanic.
It would have been goodness.
One of the very few items that had RMS Titanic written on them. Many people don't know that, but only the ship, the two life rings, and souvenirs sold in what they called the barber shop at the time. That's where they sold the souvenirs. There were very few. There were pin cushions and hat bands and some pennants and some postcard booklets. But my favorite one, it was the first object I saw live at an auction. It was bought by a collector I had not yet signed up to our museums to display. And I got to witness him bidding on it in on the phone line. And I was fortunate enough to call him, be the first one to call him after he bought it, congratulated him. Within a week of that time period, we had our first agreement with the major collector of Titanic memorabilia, more than 1,400 pieces from that gentleman. So that's why it's my favorite artifact. It goes back to when I started putting the Titanic collection together for us.
I also love that, because I wouldn't have thought about it, but it makes total sense that there would have been a gift shop on board and they would have sold like branded merchandise and like a pin cushion, and that might be something that survives more than 100 years later.
Yes, no, very true. It's not so much a gift shop or souvenirs as it was just mementos of the time. You know, these ships were Royal Mail steamships. They were also immigration vessels. They were not like today's cruise ships, for sure.
Raphael, I know you do a lot of debunking of Titanic conspiracies. Have you ever looked into the fake or forged artifacts from the Titanic? Because as much as people are willing to pay millions of dollars for the real Astor watch, then there are people who want to fake it.
You know what? I've never actually looked into the fake artifacts issue. That may be you may have just given me the next topic for the next video. But yeah, you know, I feel like I get so busy with people tagging me in the typical theories that you hear about. You know, it's the Olympic theory or the Federal Reserve theory or the fire theory, that it was actually the fire that actually caused, you know. So I've never actually done the fake artifacts.
Paul, how do you handle that? Because I'm sure, you know, for as many real artifacts there are out there, there are fake artifacts out there.
Yeah, we you know, I wouldn't say we're inundated, but we are contacted quite regularly ourselves, the auction houses that we deal with, the Titanic Historical Society, Inc., which we deal with. They get inquiries all the time. I respond to these inquiries for us, for our museum group, and for the THS on several occasions. They're out there. We're aware of people who fake them. We're aware of collectors that unfortunately collect real and purport fake or promote fake items as well. One of the ones that really occur to, and we just talked about this, I you know, the pincushion I said, which had the name on it, that's a telltale sign that it's not from Titanic, actually, if it has the name on it, because such very few very few pieces of the vessel herself, or two life rings, and these items that were sold on board the barbershop, we get inundated with, you know, the Captain Smith ashtray. My personal favorite is the letter in the bottle found along the coast of Maine 40 years after the Titanic sank, that had a letter, "Save me, help me," from Titanic. So those are some of my personal favorites that we deal with. But really, as soon as they tell us the name is on it, we pretty much can say to them, it's not real.
Oh, that's fascinating. I also love that there was a fake message in a bottle that somehow surfaced. Thank you so much to Paul Burns, curator of the Titanic Museum attractions. And thank you to Rafael Avila, the Titanic TikTok guy. Both of you were wonderful. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And that'll do it for this hour. Thanks for listening to 89.7 NPR News.